Here is what happened. A couple of weeks back, I was on a plane. I don't mention the carrier. I was on a runway, actually, going pretty fast towards the starting position, when someone was walking while we were running and moving with the plane. Somebody was walking from the back to the front, and it was a captain of that very same carrier. You saw it. Strides all over, bringing something to the front. The carriers, they fly their flight personnel from one airport to the other. They don't get a specific seat. They just sit wherever there is a seat free. So this guy was moving to the front while the plane was moving pretty fast on the runway. And you know what happened normally, right? The flight attendant would yell at that person. There would be an announcement. The plane would stop. But this time, nothing. The flight attendant took what was handed over, and the captain went back slowly while the plane was running pretty fast. Now, what was the reason why this happened? Why did the flight attendant not yell at that person? Hierarchy. And why did the captain do that in the first place? Hierarchy. And passengers like me who saw that, we looked at each other and we all thought the same thing. Effing hierarchy.
You are listening to The Mammoth in the Room, a podcast dedicated to sharing science-backed leadership strategies for real-world success.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to The Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences. And today we're kicking off a special mini-series on the evolution of hierarchy. I thought once this happened, I owe my audience the explanation. Why on earth did this phenomenon of living in hierarchical societies even develop as an evolutionary, stable human behavior? Have you ever thought about it? Well, you should, in case you are a leader, or even when you are led. And most of us are in both positions throughout our professional careers. And it doesn't matter if you're in business, in politics, in sports clubs, in churches, you name it. Because there are rules, right? And there are organizations and there are structures and everyone should adhere to these rules, but not everyone has to, obviously, as this example showed. So in order to unpack this, we start this mini-series with the first two episodes. And there we go into how we as humans moved from egalitarian bands to complex hierarchies. And because originally our ancestors lived in very flat social structures. And how did that evolve into towering hierarchies? And we'll journey from prehistoric campsites to the first kingdoms to understand the deep history of why we follow leaders at all. By the end of this episode, you'll understand why humans gave up equal say and accepted chiefs and kings. So let's step back in time to when everyone knew their leader personally, because there usually wasn't only one. And one quick reminder before we dive in. This fall, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is launching an online leadership academy. And the first thing we'll do in this academy is launch a course, an online course, designed to help leaders like you to decode the psychological and biological and evolutionary reasons and traps that hold organizations back. Stay tuned. So let's dive in. And let's start with another story. A small band of foragers huddles around a dim fire as the night settles. For as long as anyone remembers, decisions in the band have been made together. No one issues orders and hunters share meat freely. But tonight is different. Smoke billows on the horizon from a neighboring camp. An elder speaks up, voice trembling. We must unite or we won't survive what's coming. All eyes turn to one seasoned hunter, renowned for courage. He rises slowly. In this moment of fear, people who have always been equals find themselves looking to a leader. For tens of thousands of years, humans lived in small, nomadic bands of perhaps a few dozen individuals, occasionally up to a few hundred. These groups were often remarkably egalitarian. Now, what do we mean by that?
Decisions were typically made by consensus or informal agreement. No permanent chiefs or kings sat on thrones. Status differences were minimal and any leadership roles were fluid and task-specific. A skilled hunter might lead the hunt one day, but hold no authority the next. Anthropologists have noted that even the most egalitarian forager societies still have informal leaders, often those with valued knowledge or charisma. This is sometimes called prestige-based leadership. Influence earned through respect and ability rather than force. Such leaders don't command, they persuade, as Van Vugt and Smith highlighted 2019. And again, we have a lot of literature in the show notes. A wise elder might guide discussions, or a charismatic storyteller might shape group norms. Importantly, these early leaders were first among equals, and their position depended on continued goodwill. If anyone tried to dominate others or throw their weight around, the group had ways to cut them down to size. In fact, research suggests that hunter-gatherers used strict leveling mechanisms to maintain equality, from teasing and ridiculing of arrogant behavior to, in extreme cases, expelling or even executing would-be tyrants. The social ethos was clear. No one is the boss of me. For ages, our default social structure was flat. We evolved in environments where cooperation was vital, but groups were small enough that formal hierarchy wasn't needed to get things done. Cultural norms and a strong egalitarian ethos kept bullies in check and maintained social harmony. This makes the later emergence of big hierarchies all the more fascinating. So, what changed? Well, two major evolutionary pressures drove our ancestors to accept authority. And in this episode, we'll explore the first, conflict between groups. And next time, we'll examine the challenge of growing group sizes. All right, let's talk about warfare and the evolution of hierarchy. One major driver was inter-group conflict, in a word, war. As soon as groups of humans started competing over resources, territory, or survival, the stakes got higher. Imagine two neighboring villages in ancient times. One remains an egalitarian cluster of families with no central leadership. The other has coalesced under a decisive chief who can mobilize warriors swiftly. If these two villages clash, which is more likely to prevail? Historically, the more unified and organized group often wins. Strong leadership and internal discipline can give one group a competitive edge over another. Now, researchers Peter Turchin and Sergei Gavrie argued that complex hierarchies arose as an evolutionary response to the pressure of warfare. This idea comes from multi-level selection theory. While natural selection acts on individual level first, it can also act at the level of groups next. A cohesive group of individuals willing to cooperate and perhaps obey orders can outperform a same-size group of quarreling individuals. In effect, war rewards those societies that suppress internal dissent and present a united front. Hierarchy, with its chain of command and ability to enforce group-wide norms, is one powerful way to achieve that unity. As Turchin and Garrier 2009 put it, large-scale, hierarchically complex societies may have emerged because groups that adopted these structures survived and expanded at the expense of others. History seems to back this up. The first agricultural villages appeared over 10,000 years ago, and as farming spread, population grew. By around 5,000 years ago, in regions like Mesopotamia and Egypt, we see the rise of the earliest state-level societies, basically the first kingdoms. These early states were born in a world of frequent intergroup conflict. Rulers commanded armies, built fortifications, and established laws, all hallmarks of hierarchical organizations geared toward survival. Once the cycle of competition started, it escalated. Small tribes coalesced into chiefdoms to defend themselves. Chiefdoms merged or were conquered, forming even larger entities. Within a few millennia, great empires had populations in the tens of millions under centralized authority. Societies scaled up from the egalitarian band propelled by an arms race between groups. War was a crucible that forged hierarchy. Only the most organized societies could survive constant conflict, and organization often meant strong leadership. Of course, this process was not bloodless or benign. What was good for a group's survival in war often came at the cost of individual freedom. Yet people accepted harsh rule as the lesser evil if it meant avoiding conquest or enslavement by outsiders. In summary, intergroup conflict was a powerful force driving the rise of leadership and hierarchy. But it wasn't the only force. Our ancestors faced another massive challenge as they formed larger communities. That's where we'll pick up next time. In the next episode, we'll explore how increasing group size and complexity pushed human societies to embrace leaders and hierarchies as a solution. All right, if this episode resonated, please subscribe, rate, and share it with anyone who is interested in leadership. And don't forget, Mammoth Leadership Sciences is launching an online leadership academy this fall. It's packed with insights, tools, and frameworks to help you become a more self-aware, adaptive leader. Keep an eye out. And lastly, if you're interested in more, you can order my book. It has the same title as this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It offers a practical roadmap how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding business results. And it does that in three sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bucconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.